Physically speaking, there are many things going on in our flesh bodies, of which, for the most part, we have no conscious awareness. We only begin to have a conscious awareness when something goes wrong, as a rule, so that there is some sort of tribulation. Then we become aware that the digestion is at work, perhaps, or not at work, the way it should be, or that the lungs are not really working the way they ought to, or the throat is in trouble, or whatever it may be. Properly speaking, there is no great consciousness of what it is that is happening to maintain the movement of life through the physical body. We don't really need to know. But because life is being maintained in the physical body, there are other things happening which are not necessarily of this physical nature. We recognize this morning, for instance, that there is the matter of the mind present because of the physical body. It is something that has emerged out of the physical mechanism and is available for some sort of use. There is the ability to feel emotion. There are emotional feelings related to the mental processes. There are emotional feelings related to the physical processes. So all this is present. Presumably for a reason. Much of human attention is caught up with the matter of trying to maintain the life in the body. It tends to seem that it's slipping away somehow. And in any case, we have to eat, we're told, to live, rather than live to eat. And our emotions are unruly at times, and our mental processes are skittish at times. And so a great deal of attention is paid by people in general to the matter of trying to hold things together somehow for a little longer, because there's this fear of death, as it would be described. And so all sorts of things go on that are of very little consequence, that certainly are not evidence of the fact that there is attunement with the processes described in terms of a whirlwind. The movement of spirit in spiritual substance. Now, for this whirlwind to be creative in experience, there must be, rightly, spiritual attunement established. The whirlwind doesn't move only at the level of spiritual substance, but it is important that there should be spiritual substance in one's own experience in which the whirlwind may move. It is also moving at mental, emotional, and physical levels. But the the bringing of things together, so to speak, only occurs when there is a spiritual connection, when the spiritual substance is present sufficiently to accommodate spirit, so that spirit may begin to govern in relationship to the movement of the whirlwind, mentally, emotionally, and physically. That we rightly and intelligently should be concerned with the generation of this spiritual substance in order that that connection may be made. It can't be generated if we're involved with the mental emotional processes, trying to make them work in some way that we think they should, trying to keep them under control, perhaps, and the same of the physical form. What is needed is for spirit to be moving in spiritual substance, so that spiritual substance may be present mentally, emotionally, and physically speaking. And then the spirit is in charge of what is happening. Now, one can see that as being desirable, theoretically. But as a theory alone, it isn't of much consequence. It's only valuable when it begins to actually be the state of affairs. So, because of this, presumably, we have joyously, I trust, but occasionally rather reluctantly, been willing to relinquish our involvement in this mental and emotional state in which human beings find themselves. Because they find themselves in that state, there is the inclination to think that state is important and therefore has to be struggled with in order to get it to be orderly. But of course, it isn't important in that way. It's important simply as a means by which spirit may govern the world, obviously, of mankind. Mankind in that world has not been governed by the spirit, because there hasn't been adequate substance present in which spirit could be accommodated. And human beings were not interested, really, in accommodating spirit. They were just interested in their own affairs. Now, when we come into the chapel together for a purpose, presumably we are no longer interested in our own human affairs. We're interested in whatever it is that spirit would bring forth, so that we are concerned to provide the substance by which that bringing forth may occur, by which our minds and hearts may be governed, and our physical bodies move in unison with spirit. A very simple matter, but not one which apparently is all that easily allowed to happen. However, when we do come into the chapel, do we reproduce a habitual condition which was the case last time we came into the chapel? Is it just simply a repeat of something that happened before? Have we got ourselves into a habit so that we are unconscious of what is really happening? We are conscious, perhaps, of vagrant thoughts, vagrant feelings, both mentally and physically, and we may pay attention to that. If we do that, we remain unconscious of what it is that's really going on. What it is that's really going on, insofar as we are concerned, relates to this matter of spirit and the matter of the substance which will accommodate spirit. Now we need to pay attention, to pay attention to that, so that there is something deliberate about our coming into the chapel. Not merely deliberate in the sense that we walk in here and sit down. We have to be that much deliberate in any case, though we might as well carry the deliberation a little further, so that we are alert and perceptive at a spiritual level of what it is that is actually happening. We have been drawn to come into this place. Now we may, on the basis of our mental and emotional experience out of the past, claim that we chose, made a mental choice, and there was some feeling involved, to come into the chapel. Do you think that's why you're here? Because you actually chose to be here? Well, there was something of a choice seemingly present. But you came into the chapel because you couldn't stay away. If you could stay away, I'm sure you would have done it. The point is that there is something happening which is above and beyond this level of mental and emotional choice. We can look around in the world and see human beings imagining that they are choosing to do this and that. That is a vain and evil imagination, because it's not their choice. It is what they must do on the basis of the state of their mind and emotions. They are pushed into doing what they do. And then, in order to maintain a little self-respect, they say, well, I chose to do that. Of course, there are times when they say, well, I didn't choose to do that. So-and-so made me do that. If we make that sort of a claim, of course, we are saying, well, I'm not responsible for my own actions. Somebody else is. That's something to think about in the usual human pattern of things. But we're not concerned with that. We are not concerned with the choices of the mental and emotional equipment. The person who is present, occupying the mental, emotional, and physical equipment, is the one who rightly decides what should happen. Not the matter for the mind to decide or for the heart to decide, but for the one who is present. So when we do come into the chapel, let us be aware that there is something happening beyond our own choice, mentally and emotionally, beyond our vagrant thoughts and feelings, something which is moving by reason of such spiritual substance as is present in ourselves. Presumably, after all these years, there's some. And if there is spiritual substance, spirit is accommodated by it. Spirit is present and in action. Do you know that? Do you have a perception of that? Or is the habit of coming into the chapel just the habit of coming into the chapel? And there is, in such case, no particular need to do anything other than sit down on the seat, which may very shortly feel not as comfortable as it did to start with. And all these things will assert themselves and distract from a perception, an awareness of what it is that is actually happening. if all that is happening is that we're coming in here and sitting ourselves down and willingly participating in whatever it is that's going to put in an appearance, we don't know much. It is important that we should find an attunement with the whirlwind that is operating in this setting by reason of our presence here. It isn't something separate from us. It's operating here because we are here. It operates elsewhere when we are elsewhere. But here we have a setting where we may bring it all together. And there needs to be a deliberate attitude of reverence and sacredness when you come into this setting. Not for any external reason, not because this is a chapel and presumably therefore a holy place, not for that reason, but because you have an awareness of spirit accommodated by the spiritual substance present in yourself, which permeates everything of your own expression and of the expression of others, so as there is a consciousness of the sacredness of it. Therefore, one has an attitude of reverence. I'm delighted that, as a general rule at least, when you come into the chapel before a service, you don't start chattering amongst yourselves about this and that. There is a willingness to be silent. There is a certain awareness of sacredness. I'm not saying it isn't already there. All I'm saying is that there needs to be a deliberate consideration of the fact so that one may become perceptive of what it is that is actually happening because of this. Then there begins to be association with the whirlwind. Unless there is that association with the whirlwind so that it is a reality, an experience, how can anything come out of it? It is said that the Lord spoke out of the whirlwind. It's made to look as though he was speaking to Job, but that wasn't the case, because Job was the facility by which the expression might appear. Because Job was associated with the whirlwind. One might say he was one with the whirlwind. The outer form, which rose up from the material, physical level all the way through to the spiritual level, was what Job was in the external sense. And so what found expression was his own expression. On that basis, of course, there is no expectation of getting anything. The human approach, as we are well aware, is based in this expectation of getting something from somewhere, from someone, because there is the sense of emptiness, a void. I must fill it up somehow. But the point is that one allows this whirlwind, which includes the physical body, the whole of oneself, and reaches beyond that into the animal kingdom, the kingdom of vegetation, the mineral kingdom, is very all-inclusive. It all comes to point in oneself, and one is aware then, if one is alert and perceptive and deliberately considering the matter, of the whirlwind in one's own experience. Now, what particularly in the way of attitude on the part of mind and heart would allow for the increased association and experience of what we are describing now as the whirlwind? We know what it is very well. In all things, give thanks. This is not a commonplace attitude on the part of human beings, but it is the means by which there is attunement with what is ascending. The usual attitude of human beings, as we noted again this morning, is one of accusation, blame and complaint, criticism. In other words, one is attuned, therefore, with what is going down. Everybody easily sees what is wrong. It doesn't matter whether what is wrong is in oneself or in someone else, in circumstances, in the world as a whole. Everybody easily sees that and is bothered by it. It generates emotions of various sorts and gets the mind operating so as to deal with this wrongness in some fashion, which all is indication of the fact that one is making sure that one is attuned with what is going down. And virtually all human attitudes and endeavors relate to this matter of going down. There's something wrong, we've got to correct it. Isn't that the basis for most human function? In all things, give thanks. Let the attunement be in the ascending process so that one may ascend in mind and heart and body. Now, while this is a matter of individual determination as to whether one gives thanks or curses one's lot, one can make either choice. The process is rightly and factually a collective one. We're associated with other people. Now, as we individually begin to give thanks, to the extent that we have, so that we have an attunement with this ascending process, we move out of the state of imagining that everything around us is wrong. In theory, we know that that isn't so. Everything around us is the way it is because of the state in which human beings exist. It's exactly right. It's perfect. There's nothing wrong with it at all. It should be that way on the basis of the way human beings behave. As ye sow, so also shall ye reap. That's the way it works. And there is no real justification for complaint about the reaping. So, we give thanks. We see the futility of complaint about the reaping, of objection to what is happening, because it's bound to happen. Whatever happens is bound to happen on the basis of the way things work. Don't stop complaining about it. Let it happen in the way it's going to happen. But give thanks for the opportunity of becoming increasingly aware of the process of ascension. That's wonderful. It's going on too. We can either choose to curse our lot and go down, or to give thanks and go up. Well, which would you choose? And yet, human beings are always justifying the attitude of cursing their lot. Well, what's the point? What's the use of that? One may be able to make an excellent argument as to why one should curse one's lot and then do it and go down. But why? Why go through that nonsensical rigmarole? Give thanks and go up. All things work together to perfection for those who love the Lord, it is said. It's true. There is an attitude of thankfulness which brings one into attunement with what is ascending. An attitude of thankfulness and a delight to share in the processes of ascension in consequence. Certainly a willingness to relinquish this cursing business. We're not here to curse anything, but to bless everything. Bless everything because we are allowing our own minds and hearts and bodies to be attuned with the ascending process. And in that attunement, the invitation is provided for all minds and hearts and bodies on the face of the earth to participate. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But they certainly won't unless there is a door opened for it to happen. And the door is what happens in oneself. So we share this and begin to see what this process really is. And how, when we come into the chapel to allow something of a very specific service to be shared, we come in alert and sensing within ourselves what it is that is rising up. We will sense that, we will be alert, because we are thankful to be associated with this rising up process. If we reluctantly come in and sort of back into it, I don't suppose very much will happen. But we can easily, with such awareness as we now have, recognize that there is a particular whirlwind occurring every time we assemble. What's the nature of it? Now, it's not something that the mind can figure out. It is something which one is capable of sensing to the extent that the heart is pure. And we become aware of what is happening. And there is an increased sense of thankfulness to be associated with what is happening. Because here's something rising up. Something providing a facility by which a greater release and expression of the truth of heaven may occur. And that release and expression of the truth of heaven is a radiant experience in exact proportion to the fact of the ascending experience. As there is this lifting up, the outpouring occurs. They're not separate from each other. They're both part of the same process. I suppose in terms which we know, we'd say the positive and negative aspects are the same process. It's all one thing. But my main concern this evening has been what? To alert you to a greater extent to the fact of the whirlwind operating every time we come together. And we need to be increasingly aware of it and associated with it and thankful for it, so that we share then in what the creative word that is spoken because of the whirlwind. Couldn't be spoken without it. And if we have an increasingly conscious awareness of it and a deliberate association with it, there is that much more experience of the whirlwind and of the radiant expression which comes because of it. And of course, we carry that association with the whirlwind in the personal sense wherever we go, and the radiant expression of the word wherever we go, in all our ways of living. It's good to participate in the creative process, which has always been present, not something new. It's always been present, but we only now begin to become aware of it to the extent that there is the spiritual substance available to accommodate the action of spirit, which is the whirlwind. So there we are.